that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
Okay, we'll assume it's friendly anyway, okay?
There's two of them, and they
stayed
the exact same spot the whole time, but I'm sorry, like, say that.
Oh, my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh, Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please. All right, Lisa, are you ready for this?
The cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular hit.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that these days like
these. Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Hello, and welcome to edition 435 of Strange Days Indeed, the program that observes and reports on the phenomena that surround one of the greatest mysteries that humanity has ever faced. UFOs, unidentified flying objects. This week, the 2nd in April 2007, editorial contributor Dave Ferlott, co-publisher of the 2006 Canadian UFO Survey Chris Rutkowski, historian and author of Volume 1 of UFOs and the National Security State Richard M. Dolan, and as he does every second week, Alfred Lemberg will take us home. These are Strange Days Indeed. First, a response for feedback to the program from Richard C.N., who emailed SDI at virtuallystrange.net. Richard writes, Dear SDI, FYI, there is a podcast called The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe that boasts 15,000 listeners. Their latest podcast deals with, among other things, the Phoenix Lights. You can access this podcast at theskepticsguide.org. That's theskepticsguide.org. Richard got a lot more facts on the Phoenix Lights from SDI, he says, than the critical thinkers. Well, yes, that's what SDI is all about, Richard. And thank you. And a news item here that you are probably going to be interested in. Francis Ridge and his team have uploaded a document titled Chronology of 1973's Worldwide UFO Wave to the NICAP website. You'll find a link to it in this program's listing. The NICAP site is an amazing repository of UFO history in factual document form. And if you want an excellent source of good UFO material, the NICAP site is a must visit.
These are Strange Days Indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Ferlott.
There's a thread on the UFO updates list called The Roswell Incident, The True Story. And it's all about the broadcast of a program with the same name. Well, I got to watch that particular program because it was broadcast recently here in Canada. And this program is very recent, and it rehashes, well, pretty well everything we know or think we know about what happened near Roswell, New Mexico, back in 1947. One of the things I found most interesting about the program is that it references the alien autopsy film in great detail, including showing all the evidence that proves the AA film was, well, for lack of a better term, a hoax. Sorry, dear listener, if you think otherwise, but we actually get to see the people that manufactured the alien for the movie, and even Ray Santilli states that it was a recreation. Bottom line, it cost very little to make, but made several million dollars and therefore it was a success. We also get to see and hear testimony from the various witnesses, including Jesse Marcel Jr., telling us about what he remembers seeing in his kitchen when his father brought home some wreckage to actually show to his son. We also get confirmation that Major Jesse Marcel stated that the weather balloon he posed with in General Ramey's office was part of the cover-up and was not, repeat, not, the real wreckage that he had helped recover. Now, for those familiar with me, you know that Roswell is one of my favorite UFO reports because, well, to put it rather blatantly, we have undeniable proof that we were lied to by the then United States Army Air Force. Their published reports on Roswell state that they had to lie to us because what they recovered from the crash site was really a top-secret project. What they failed to say is that they keep changing the story over the years. It was a weather balloon. It was a mogul balloon. It was parachute test dummies from a decade later, etc., etc. The good thing about this documentary is it covers almost everything, including some testimony from Nick Redfern, but like every good documentary, it presents the facts, tries to come to some kind of conclusion, but in the end, it is really up to the viewer to decide what's real and what's fiction. The posters to the UFO updates list make a number of interesting comments about their thoughts on the documentary. Some are dismayed that the AA film is mentioned, but as is quickly pointed out by Nick Pope, we now have to live with the alien autopsy flim-flam as being inexorably linked to Roswell for all time, much the same as we have to live with the comments about the mysterious debris that could not be burnt, cut, and always came back to its original shape when it was balled up. Some people mentioned that the material could have been rubber and aluminum foil, but even a school kid knows how easy it would be to cut or burn such a substance. The documentary touches on a number of different things associated with UFOs, including animal mutilations, V-2 rocket experiments, and even the Japanese Fugo pilots. But it still leaves us wanting more. I tend to agree with one of the other posters that say anything released about Roswell nowadays is just going to be the same old, same old. Unless we get some kind of substantial proof, the Roswell incident is going to go on forever being a mystery. We're at a point right now that even if the United States Air Force came forward and showed us the wreckage, the corpses of the dead aliens, and stated categorically that they had lied to us for whatever reason, we still would have people asking, what is it they're really covering up? I have my particular thoughts about what happened near Roswell back in 1947, and anybody associated with ufology has their own interpretation about what they believe happened, including some people who still maintain that the alien autopsy film is genuine and is being subjected to an effort to discredit it and hide the truth. Well, short of an Independence Day-style event that ties Roswell to some alien race making a scouting run at our planet, we will never, I repeat, never, have indisputable proof of what is really the true story of Roswell. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange Days, indeed.
I'm so annoyed that I didn't get to see that documentary, Dave Furlong.
Well, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm not blaming you.
No, but if I had known, I would have got a hold of you immediately and got, hey, take a look at this.
Yeah, what was that, on History Channel up here in Canada?
I'm not sure if it was History or Space, because I tend to float between those two channels. I'm leaning towards, believe it or not, that it was History Channel.
Yes.
Because I stay there more than I do on Space.
Mm-hmm. What was the name of the documentary again?
The Roswell Incident is a True Story.
And of course, we don't know that it is.
No, but they did do their best to try and nail everything on the head. What was very interesting, like I said, was when they said, okay, well, here's this alien autopsy film, and now let's introduce you to the people that actually put it together. I was like, okay.
Yes. Poor Ed Gurman.
Sorry, Ed. They brought the guy out who actually built it.
Mm-hmm. Ed Gurman, for those of you who don't know, who don't read the UFO updates list, has long been a proponent of the alien autopsy film and the fact that, as far as he's concerned, it's real.
Unfortunately, Ed, no, it's not. It's one of those things where you kind of have to bite the bullet when the guy who put it together and releases it comes forward and says, you know,
yes,
it's what I think it would have looked like.
A recreation. Not even a recreation. It was a simulation.
Yes, more of a simulation than a recreation, because he, according to what he said at one point, was he didn't really see it too much on the actual film because it was pretty bad.
Well, we'll just make it up as we go along.
Yeah, best accounts. Sort of like historical accuracy in some of these movies that are out there now, with like Troy and Alexander. Historical accuracy, yeah, close, maybe sometimes.
But no textbook, huh?
No.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave Verlott.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again next week.
For sure.
Good one, too.
Thank you.
Welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
We have just discovered an important note from space. The Martians plan to throw events for all the human race.
I don't know about you folks around the world, but certainly here in Canada, we have had interesting media coverage number 3 happen this past week. Chris Rutkowski and Jeff Dittman released their latest Canadian UFO survey for 2006. And joining us on the line from Winnipeg, Manitoba, is one half of the survey team. Here's Chris Rutkowski. Hello, sir.
Hello there, Earl.
How are you indeed?
Well, I'm fair to middling, mostly middling, but, you know, that'll come with time.
I guess the excitement level has ramped up a bit for you, huh?
For some reason, we received more media coverage for this particular survey than any other one. In fact, as was pointed out to me, we even made Letterman. So you sort of wonder why the third highest level of UFOs and not the peak back in 2004, but it's just one of those things.
And I've had several phone calls, thanks to you, from various media outlets. One of them, unfortunately, I couldn't do, but I did talk to a nice lady reporter from the Hamilton Spectator, just outside Toronto, another large city, and they were intrigued to know that they were number 7 in the number of sightings reported in 2006.
Yeah, Hamilton made the top, I don't know, 5 or 10 or however we're doing it these days, because the numbers always seem to fluctuate. But yeah, Hamilton made the list of top cities for the second time since we've been doing that. We only started doing that a handful of years ago, but I think it was in 2000 or 2001 that Hamilton had been on the list as well.
And I guess British Columbia is still up there?
As a matter of fact, British Columbia, according to our statistics, had exactly the same number of UFO reports as the year before. However, because the number of UFO reports from Ontario went down, they switched places, whereas Ontario was in the lead with the province with the most UFO reports in 2005. In 2006, BC surged ahead.
Mm. Any surprises in the numbers of reports for last year?
Well, there were a few curious things. First of all, Saskatchewan had the largest number of reports in a single year ever recorded, which is almost 100. Same could be said for Nova Scotia and also Nunavut, the Canadian territory in the far north, which only came into existence in the late 1990s.
Saskatchewan did pretty well, I understand, in 2006.
Yes, they had almost 100 UFO reports, which was a record for them. Most of the sightings in Saskatchewan were due to one particular region. In fact, one area around a town named Maidstone in the north central area of Saskatchewan. And I guess that's due to a very dedicated cluster of avid UFO sky watchers down there.
I posted to the UFO updates list a story from one of the Saskatoon newspapers that said that the mayor of Maidstone, Saskatchewan, was really quite surprised to hear that they had so many sightings there.
Yes, even the mayor was surprised. So that tells you that this is a very unusual phenomenon.
Yes, indeed, indeed. Cases that really made your eyebrows pop last year.
Well, there are a few that every year you have a page or so that details some of the more curious cases. Certainly one of them occurred in Newfoundland in a small community named Brent's Cove, which is on the northern shore of Newfoundland. A couple were out in the late evening around 11:15, 11:45, somewhere in that area, and happened to see a large object suddenly appear in the sky before them, blotting out the stars, but then surrounding this object, outlining it, were perhaps 50 or 60 small white, as was described, Christmas tree lights in the shape of a V or a triangle. And this object hung there, motionless, silently, for some time, and suddenly these little lights went out. But the object still was there because they could see the stars were blacked out continually. And after they continued to watch the sky, it turned on again. And then off again. And it finally turned on, and then it appeared to turn slightly. Its point seemed to turn somewhat, and it headed out over the rocky and mountainous Newfoundland coast and was lost to sight. I had the opportunity of speaking with the fellow who had made this sighting, and he was described by a number of people in the community as a very down-to-earth person, very solidly grounded, not prone to be making up stories, not prone to be seeking attention. He, as he explained to me, that this was something that he would never in his life would he ever dream of seeing and certainly doesn't want to see again.
It's amazing, isn't it? The number of witnesses who report things who have had absolutely no interest in UFOs or flying saucers or strange things in the sky. But they're the ones who inevitably, it seems, get to spot these things.
Indeed, and they're very sincere about it. They don't know what it was that they've seen, and yet they've seen it, and what do they do next? Because it certainly couldn't possibly exist.
Yeah, it's swamp gas. Any other sightings that impressed you?
You know, a number of them impressed me. Another one that certainly stands out in my mind, and again, I had the opportunity of speaking with the witness at some length, was a fellow who was driving home from work very late one evening near North Bay in Ontario. And in this particular region where he was driving, there are very, very few homes, almost a rural area, and it's a very straight, flat road. He's driving along, and ahead of him, he saw three blue lights. And he thought, well, if they're coming towards him, it's three lights, not two or four. So he suspected that perhaps there's some motorcycles that are coming down the road towards him, although the blue color was throwing him off. As he continued down the road, two of the lights began to move up above the road, and one took a position up over some trees and began spinning around. The second one moved above the trees and then took off away from the highway. The third continued to be on the highway, getting closer and closer and closer, and he was getting quite nervous at this point, and the light finally reached his car and zoomed by in the passing lane, but as it passed by, not more than a meter away, as he says, just outside his driver's window, there was nothing there except a light. There was no motorcycle, there was no car, there was no truck, nothing except a blue light that zipped by him.
Ooh, freak out time, I
absolutely.
Would think.
Absolutely. He was absolutely flabbergasted.
Yeah, I would be too. I was watching Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind again the other day and loved that scene where Richard Dreyfuss stops at the railroad crossing and there's a vehicle behind him and he waves him on by.
That's right.
Goes back to his map and the thing rises up and then goes over the top of his truck.
Great scene. And yet drawn from actual sightings. actual experiences.
Alan Hynek was heavily involved with that.
Right. In fact, he had a cameo appearance in the movie.
So there we have the lights on the highway, the motorcycle lights. Now we have the triangle. Any others that you'd care to get into?
Now, there was an interesting disc-shaped object over Christina Lake in British Columbia. Four people had actually seen a disc-shaped object skimming over the lake. It seemed to be going at a low altitude, but dropping down the lake from time to time, and then seemed to go up about 500 feet. This was in April of 2006, about 10:45 in the evening. And the object seemed to be giving off a soft yellow-white glow by itself, as if it was internally lit. Furthermore, there seemed to be a line of bright blue lights, like a movie marquee, running around the midpoint of the object. It wasn't going very fast, and all four witnesses watched the object for more than a full minute, and it was finally lost to sight. Now, they also said that they could hear a humming noise, very, very faint, as it moved across the lake. This was a very puzzling event, and seen by a number of witnesses. Doesn't seem to be an aircraft, doesn't seem to be a balloon, doesn't seem to be a star or a planet. Very, very curious. Here's another one, Chilliwack, also in B.C., May the 3rd, 2006. This one is classified as a really large one because it was one of these phoenix-like type of objects, half a city block long, pyramidal shape with a rounded top. Again, blocking out the stars as it passed by, seen by six people for a couple of minutes. Again, 10:45 at night. It was a beautiful, clear, starry night. They were looking up at the stars, saw this object passing overhead. They noticed it because it was blocking out the stars. And once their attention was focused on it, they noticed they could see some sort of structure to it. You could see the outline. Couldn't see the body very, very clearly. Headed east away from Chilliwack, and without turning, it seemed to suddenly turn, go north and disappeared.
I have to be honest and say I love hearing these reports. Hearing you describe them is so much better than getting them in an email.
Yeah. Well, there's so many stories. The other one that seemed to be a really kind of profound one happened in November around 10 o'clock Eastern Time. And the witness was a pilot of a commercial airliner. Now, this didn't actually occur on Canadian